Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Dr. Francine Foss and Dr. Lynn Wilson. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Francine is joined by her new co-host, Dr. Lynn Wilson. Dr. Wilson is Vice Chairman and Clinical Director of the Department of Therapeutic Radiology and Professor of Therapeutic Radiology and Dermatology at Yale Cancer Center. He specializes in the treatment of patients with lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. After receiving his master's in public health from Yale and his medical degree from George Washington University School of Medicine, Dr. Wilson returned to Yale for his internship and residency in internal medicine and therapeutic radiology. He then served as chief resident at Yale before joining the faculty in 1994. Dr. Wilson is one of only a few radiation therapists in the country that performs a specialized kind of treatment called total electron beam radiation, which is specifically for patients with a rare disease called cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. It's a very complicated procedure in the field of radiation oncology that Dr. Wilson has extensive experience with. In 2008, Dr. Wilson won the David J. LaFell Prize for Clinical Excellence and the Francis Gilman Blake Award, an award designated by the senior class and presented to a member of the Yale School of Medicine faculty for exceptional teaching of the medical sciences. Here's Francine Foss with Dr. Wilson.
We're going to start by talking a little bit about your background, Lynn, and how you became involved in the treatment of cancer.
Well, that's a bit of an interesting story, and I think I was fortunate. I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, which is a Washington, D.C. suburb, and happens to be the place where the National Cancer Institute resides. And so as summers rolled around during college, I actually was very fortunate to get a summer job at the National Cancer Institute. And the first laboratory I worked in dealt with neurologic diseases and did a fair amount of laboratory bench research looking at central nervous system tumors. And that was an excellent experience. Started learning about oncology at that time as a college student, developed more of an interest in biology, and then I continued those summers at the NCI through college and actually into medical school, which I was able to do. I went to George Washington University for medical school in Washington, D.C. And my summer job transitioned into a different laboratory, which was also in the National Cancer Institute, but was in the radiation oncology branch. And so that's when I first really learned about the field of radiation oncology early on as a medical student during the summer. So I think it was fortuitous that I happened to live in the Bethesda, Maryland area over the summers, which is where NCI was, and that's how I really got my first exposure to the field of radiation oncology and cancer.
What is your current focus in cancer now, Lynn?
So it's really two areas. The primary areas are cutaneous lymphoma, so you and I obviously collaborate very closely in that area. And I see all types of patients with lymphomas of the skin and make recommendations regarding their treatment, specifically in regard to radiation treatment. And the other area that I primarily see patients is lung cancer. Those are those two areas.
So, Lynn, I'd like to clarify for our listeners the difference between a medical oncologist and a radiation therapist or a radiation oncologist.
So the main difference is both of these physicians primarily take care of and evaluate patients with cancer. The medical oncologist generally is involved in the administration of systemic or chemotherapies or hormonal therapies, depending on the type of malignancy, but generally the type of treatment that the medical oncologist is recommending and has expertise in are therapies which provide therapy and are circulating around the entire body. Medical oncologists are also boarded in internal medicine, so they've completed a full internal medicine residency and additional training in hematology and medical oncology, or perhaps just medical oncology. Radiation oncology also involves 1 year of internal medicine, generally as an internship, but then 4 years of specialized residency training in the field of radiation oncology. And during that time, that type of physician learns a lot about oncology and how to administer radiation treatment for all of the different cancers or malignant diseases. And the radiation treatment can be given in many different forms, but that's an additional 4 years of training after internship. But those are the primary differences. One provides radiation treatment and the other provides systemic treatment, which is usually in the form of chemotherapy.
And Lynn, it was true where I trained at the National Cancer Institute that the radiation therapy physicians and the medical oncologists oftentimes worked together, oftentimes had the same conferences, and had training programs that allowed them to overlap to see the other side of things.
Right. So that's really important. And you were at a place that did that very early on. There's still some medical centers that really don't have much what we call multidisciplinary interaction in that way, but it's really essential. It's something that we think is very important here at Yale, where we work very closely together. And in this way, the patient can really get an opinion and a treatment plan, which is synergistic, and the physicians are working together. It's also efficient for the patient so that the patient doesn't have to go to multiple different buildings or offices to see a variety of different specialists. It's really one-stop shopping. So as you and I take care of cutaneous lymphoma patients together, we're working closely together, we're talking, we're looking at the images together, we're consulting together, trying to do the best we can for that patient.
Lynn, could you help us to understand a little bit how you decide whether or not a patient is a candidate for radiation therapy?
So that's a good but complicated question, and it really depends on the situation. There might be five different types of patients that you and I see in a given week with cutaneous lymphoma, but two of them we might feel are excellent candidates for radiation and the others may not be. And it depends on the stage of their disease, what type of lymphoma they may have, whether this is a primary presentation of their disease, it's just been diagnosed for the first time. We take their age and other medical problems into considerations, logistical complications and side effects of treatment. So the decision-making is fairly complicated, which again gets back to the advantages of multiple physicians working in concert together in a multidisciplinary fashion to come up with the best plan for the patient. In lung cancer, for example, it's the same type of thing. We may see a patient and surgery may be the best treatment for them. Perhaps it's chemotherapy alone, chemotherapy plus radiation, a combination of all three. So with the advanced knowledge that we have regarding the diseases and the complexity that comes along with the diseases that we understand now in 2010, these decisions are complicated.
So how do most of your patients actually come to radiation oncology? Is that something that a patient needs to decide on his or her own, or are they referred in by the surgeons, by the medical oncologists, or other physicians?
It's almost always another physician. And in most cases, depending on what type of cancer it is, in the case of cutaneous lymphoma, for example, it might be yourself as a medical oncologist. And in areas or institutions that have significant expertise, it may often be a dermatologist, which is often the case at Yale, because that patient will be referred to a Yale dermatologist who has expertise in skin lymphoma from their outside dermatologist. In the case of lung cancer, most of the patients that I see are typically referred to me either by a medical oncologist or a surgeon. I also do some breast cancer work, and the same thing for those patients. It's usually either a medical oncologist or the surgeon who's referring the patient to me because they've obviously seen the patient first and they've decided that radiation may possibly play a role in the patient's care.
So Lynn, when a lot of people hear the word radiation therapy or radiation, they conjure up a lot of negative images in their mind. People are afraid of radiation, and perhaps because they don't really understand what radiation therapy is. Could you just go through some of the details about radiation therapy? What is it? How do you do it? Is it safe?
So, of course, there are a variety of different forms of radiation treatment. The type of radiation that we used most often is called external beam. It's generated by a device called a linear accelerator, which is very expensive. It's very high-end technology, extremely modern technology, and it generates an X-ray beam, which is aimed at the tumor. And the design and shaping of that beam and getting the proper aiming at the tumor is a complicated business. It involves a lot of treatment planning, a lot of computer work, a lot of input from the physician. That's one type of radiation treatment. There are other types. Brachytherapy, for example, is a type of radiation where we would implant radioactive seeds into a tumor in the head and neck, or in the prostate, for example. That's another type. And there are several other types, but those are the two primary types of radiation that we use. But it can be concerning because I think everybody gets a pretty good sense of what surgery is. We get an operation, a tumor is removed from the body, and the patient is closed back up. But since radiation comes in these different forms and is not something that's really well understood by patients, it can be very scary. Because of that, and because of potential problems that could come along with radiation, there's an incredible amount of quality assurance that goes into not only an individual patient's treatment program, but also an entire department of radiation oncology. So there's not just a physician or groups of physicians in the standard clinical sense that we're used to in a hospital or a clinic, but we have a cadre or a group of folks called dosimetrists who are involved in treatment planning design with the physician, and physicists who are involved in calibration of the machines and also involved in the quality assurance program. So it's really actually quite a large team so that safety is ensured for the program and for the care of the patient.
So, Lynn, how common is it to find a center that delivers radiation therapy?
So it's actually very common. Most places in the United States, all major cities have radiation oncology, and even rural areas nowadays, not too far away from any given location, have radiation centers. They may not be particularly large. They may not offer the specific expertise of a very large academic center. But fortunately, most places in the United States, radiation therapy is relatively easily accessible.
When one thinks about radiation therapy and potential side effects, you know, one thinks about, you know, skin burning and inflammation, for instance, from the beam. But there could potentially be other side effects as well that people are worried about. Oftentimes, the worry is not justified. So I wonder if you could just go through for us, what are the side effects of radiation therapy?
So that's an excellent point, because a lot of times I'll meet a new patient and they'll have heard a lot about radiation, or perhaps they'll have a friend or a family member who's had radiation who has had certain side effects and problems. Not all of those side effects and problems may apply to that new patient who I've just met. It really depends. The key is the part of the body that's involved. When I treat the skin, for example, obviously the skin can get inflamed, sore, red, skin side effects. If I'm treating someone with a lung tumor, for example, they may get fatigue, or their blood counts may go down a bit. They may get some soreness of their swallowing tube of the esophagus or irritation of their normal lung. But there may be other parts of the body that we're treating that side effects are quite minimal, for example. So it's really site specific. It depends on the dose of radiation, how large the radiation fields are. And another key component is, are we doing the radiation with chemotherapy, for example? And we often do that so that we can have a better outcome in terms of tumor control, but sometimes, unfortunately, that's at the price of some increased toxicity.
Most of these side effects associated with radiation therapy are reversible. Is that correct?
That's correct. Sometimes they, again, depending on the part of the body, can cause problems, but usually they almost always resolve after the treatment is completed within several weeks. There can be some situations where there can be some longer lasting effects of radiation. Some scar tissue can be formed. There can be scarring of the lung, for example, in the event of treating a lung cancer patient, or scarring of other tissues. But this is something that we take into account very, very carefully, and we've made major advances in the field in the last even 5 to 10 years at limiting the amount of normal structures and normal tissues that get exposed to the radiation. And the main benefit of that is trying to curtail these side effects, both acute that might happen while the treatment's being administered over several weeks, and long term, which a patient may have to face over years.
And Lynn, another question that people ask is there any age restriction for radiation therapy? Do you do it in infants? And is there any upper age limit for administration of radiation therapy?
There is not an age limit in either direction. Dr. Kenneth Roberts actually takes care of all of our pediatric patients at Yale, and the decisions regarding who should receive radiation and age limits on the lower end are made purely on what the best treatment is for that patient. And sometimes there are some very, very young patients where radiation will give them the best chance of cure, or combining radiation with chemotherapy. In terms of older patients, again, we don't hold age against anybody. It depends on the clinical situation and what we think think is best for the patient. We give the patient full information regarding the side effects and potential benefits of the treatment, and it's really a decision that's made by the patient with their family members, with the physician.
Well, this has been an excellent introduction into our discussion about radiation therapy, but we're going to need to take a break right now for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about radiation therapy from Dr. Lynn Wilson.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2009, there were over 65,000 new cases of melanoma in this country. Over 1,000 patients are diagnosed annually in Connecticut alone. While melanoma accounts for only about 4% of skin cancer cases, it causes the most skin cancer deaths. Early detection is the key. When detected early, melanoma is easily treated and highly curable. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for melanoma. The Specialized Programs of Research Excellence in Skin Cancer grant at Yale, also known as the SPOR grant, will help establish national guidelines on modifying behavior and on prevention as well as identification of new drug targets. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Radio Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Francine Foss, and I'm joined today by my new co-host and guest tonight, Dr. Lynn Wilson. Lynn Wilson, as I previously mentioned, is a radiation oncologist at the Yale Cancer Center, and we've been discussing the topic of radiation therapy. So, Lynn, can you tell us a little bit about how radiation therapy has changed since you first started getting involved in it a number of years ago?
Well, yeah. As I said, I first got involved in the 1980s, actually, as a medical student, and things have really evolved tremendously over that time span since the 80s. And what's really evolved is our ability to target tumors more accurately. We've incorporated new imaging modalities such as PET scanning, and although MRI has been around for a pretty long time, we've gotten better at using MRI and PET scan, of course, CT scan, for designing our treatment fields. We use all of these images. We can fuse them together so that we can use metabolic, what we call functional, and anatomic information to design the best treatment plan, the most accurate treatment plan possible for a patient. So not only are we able to target tumors much, much better now than we used to be able to even 10 and 15 years ago, but a real key to that is eliminating normal tissues that don't need to be exposed to the radiation treatment. So not only are we ensuring that we're doing a better job of hitting the target we intend on hitting, but we're doing a much better job at avoiding normal tissues, normal organs, that don't need to be exposed to any radiation. So we can hopefully have a better treatment outcome in terms of curing the tumor and less side effect or less toxicity profile for the patient. So that's really where the main change has taken place over the years. Better targeting, better ability to plan, better dosimetry and treatment design.
And Lynn, I understand that there are certain dose limits for certain normal tissues, and that somehow dictates the way that you actually do radiation therapy.
Right. And so those are exactly the kinds of things that you learn during your training, what organ tolerance limits there are, what dose can you safely give to the lung or the esophagus, what dose should we give to the breast that's safe. And we don't just give as much radiation as we can until we get to the safety point, but in fact, the doses of radiation that we administer are predicated based on research studies that have been done around the world, taking into account the doses of radiation that these tissues can handle. But in some cases, to give an example, certain tumors may be extremely responsive to very low doses of radiation. So those patients are going to not only do well in terms of cancer cure, but are also going to do very well in terms of the toxicity profile. Some other tumors, such as lung cancer, to give another example, require much higher doses of radiation for us to have a chance at good success. And that's where all of the targeting and the advances have come in over the last 10 to 20 years that have helped us deliver that higher dose. So the doses really depend on what part of the body we need to treat, how much of that organ we need to treat, and what the cancer is that we're dealing with.
So when one person is comparing their experience with radiation therapy to another person's experience, and there's vast differences in how many treatments they had, for instance, and whether they were treated once a day or more often. This is all really predicated by the underlying disease and how the radiation oncologist does the treatment planning for that individual patient.
That's right. It's for the individual patient. There are some things that do dictate how many treatments we give based on the expertise and the technology that may be available at a given center. I'll give you an example. So stereotactic body radiotherapy for early stage lung cancer, for example, in a patient who, for whatever reason, it's unsafe for them to undergo an operation to remove that small tumor. So stereotactic body radiotherapy is something that we might consider in that scenario. And we've had that technology here at Yale for several years, and we're actually a very busy center. So that type of treatment is as follows. Very careful treatment planning, of course, is devised, but that treatment may only be given to that patient in 3, 4, or 5 treatment visits. It's a very, very high dose, which is centered on a small tumor, though, and we're able to do that. We actually take the movement of the tumor into account because when we breathe, obviously a lung cancer is moving. So we account for all that, but stereotactic body radiotherapy is giving several fractions to a small area to a very high dose. So say, for example, at another center that doesn't have that technology or doesn't have that expertise, they can still offer treatment to that patient, but that treatment might have to be spread over 6 or 7 weeks. And in fact, that's how we did that treatment before we had the expertise here at Yale and the treatment technology to be able to do stereotactic procedures, for example. So sometimes it's dictated by how advanced the center is, what sort of expertise they have, and what kind of technology they have. So for patients who say, I have a colleague or a friend who got the treatment in this many treatments, it really may depend on the expertise of the center. It may be part of a clinical trial. It often depends.
Can you segue from that discussion, Lynn, and talk a little bit about clinical trials in radiation therapy? Are there trials ongoing here at the Yale Cancer Center?
So yes, there are a variety of trials ongoing here at Yale, and many of these trials are supported not just by the radiation oncology doctor, but again, are provided for patients, and patients can access these through a multidisciplinary type of evaluation. So a clinical trial that you and I are in the process of opening, actually, for total skin electron beam therapy for patients with skin lymphomas, you're involved, I'm involved. Dr. Girardi from dermatology is involved. So that's one example of a trial in our particular area of expertise. We have lung cancer trials that are available looking at the combination of radiation treatment and chemotherapy drugs. In an effort, one trial, for example, we're considering trying to actually lower the dose of radiation by using other agents to sensitize cells to radiation treatment so that we can get the same cancer cure rate, but eliminate some of the toxicity by using multiple therapies at once. We have a variety of central nervous system trials available that Jonathan Nisley is supervising, who's one of our central nervous system radiation oncologists. So we have clinical trials in almost all of the organ systems that are available, and usually they're sometimes radiation-based trials trying to address a question for radiation dose or radiation treatment planning. Sometimes it may be a chemotherapy or medical oncology or surgical question, and there may or may not be radiation involved.
And Lynn, we also have a group of scientists working in the radiation oncology department here at Yale who are looking at the basic mechanisms of radiation damage to cells and are doing some real cutting-edge work that will help us to better understand the biology of cancer as well as of the mechanisms for radiation therapy.
Right. We actually have one of the largest sections of radiobiology in the United States. Peter Glaser, the chairman of the Department of Radiation Oncology at Yale, is considered an international expert in the area of DNA repair, and he supervises all of the laboratory operations. So we have actually many scientists working at the very fundamental, basic level trying to come up with solutions, explanations, trying to understand better how radiation works on a variety of different cell types. Because if we can understand better the mechanisms through which it works, we can be much more specific in its application for certain types of diseases and patients with certain types of problems. Some of our clinical physicians are also doing laboratory research. Some of the physicians are doing clinical research, running clinical trials, for example, and seeing patients and offering clinical trials to them. And then we have have other scientists in the department who do not see patients at all, but are working in the fundamental radiobiology laboratories. And we also have a fairly large group of PhD physicists who are doing research in those areas in terms of developing the technology of radiation delivery, imaging, dosimetric evaluation. So we've really got a triple-pronged approach: clinical care, basic research in radiobiology, and research in physics, and we all work together.
And I think it's really important for everybody to know that that whole conglomeration of people comprises a fairly large proportion of the cancer center. Typically, we think mostly about the clinical oncologists and the surgeons, but certainly your group is doing some real cutting-edge work, and there are lots of folks involved in that work.
Right, yeah, a lot of folks involved. And we've had a very, very successful radiobiology program, which is not only large in terms of the number of faculty and staff, but it's one of the leading centers in the United States in terms of garnering NIH funding.
And Lynn, another hat that you wear among your many hats is as the residency training program director for radiation oncology. Can you tell us a little bit about that program?
So we obviously train physicians in radiation oncology. All of them have graduated from an accredited medical school. As I mentioned earlier, the training is a total of 5 years. There's a one-year internship, which is generally done in internal medicine. And then folks come to our department following that for specific training in the field of radiation oncology, which will subsequently lead to them taking their board examinations and being board certified in the specialty. The training program is relatively large. Starting next year, we'll be up to 11 trainees at any one given time. So we take approximately 3 trainees per year, and our program is a very popular one, I think, because of the amount of quality that we offer. The education is good. We're a large department, as we've touched upon, so there's a lot of access for the trainees to research projects and a lot of different clinical excellence from our large faculty group. It's become a very, very competitive field, and we receive approximately close to 200 applications a year for 3 positions. So it's extremely competitive. It was not that competitive many years ago, but it's something that's really been much popularized over the last 10 years or so. And I think that's probably because of a lot of the advances in technology. Much of the field was the same in terms of what's involved in terms of the interacting with patients and oncology and using the radiation devices, but the technology in our field and our ability to really accurately deliver treatment very safely has exploded in the last decade. So the field's become very popular.
And one of the major focuses of your particular work here at Yale is the treatment of patients with cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, and we've collaborated certainly over the years in that area. And Yale is one of a very small number of centers that delivers total skin electron beam radiation. Is it less than 10 centers in the United States, Lynn, that does it the way we do it?
Well, probably less than 10 do enough of it to really feel very, very comfortable offering it to patients on a daily basis. And it's one of the most complicated treatments that we do in radiation oncology. And the reason for that is because we use 6 different fields to treat the patient's entire body. And each of those fields is actually divided into 2, an upper part of the body and a lower part of the body. So we have those 12 fields. And then we have some supplemental fields that treat the area between the legs and the bottoms of the feet. Top of the head actually gets treated as part of the original 12 fields. So we've got all of these fields. To some extent, there are areas of the fields that overlap with each other, but that's actually by design. That's the way we want it to work. But there's a lot of calibration involved. The patients can get side effects from the treatment, and so that's important. You and I have a lot of expertise in this, but physicians who are attempting to do total skin electron beam therapy at a center where there's not much experience, I spend a fair amount of time taking phone calls trying to help these physicians with their cases because they're not very familiar sometimes with the diseases, and the treatment can be very, very complicated. So it works extremely well and smoothly when it's done right at a center with experience, and we have quite a bit of experience. And there are other centers in the United States with a lot of experience, but total skin electron beam therapy, when you asked earlier about is radiation therapy accessible for patients, that's something that there are probably certainly less than 20 centers in the United States that have enough of experience to really claim true expertise.
Dr. Lynn Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. He's also the new host of Yale Cancer Center Answers. If you have any questions or would like to share your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.